Hey
Happy
there, what's up? We're back.
Easter.
Happy East.
Yes, when this is released, this will be on Easter Sunday.
We're recording this intro at 10:37 p.m. on Saturday night.
Nothing like down to the wire.
Let's
It's
do
fine.
it.
But we are here to fulfill our promise to make sure that when we are on the air, you get an episode every other Sunday. So we're here for you.
I want a sun make of love. Not sure if you'll be able to hear that because sometimes Zoom glitches out, but if you heard that,
You're
if you
welcome.
didn't hear it, you're welcome too.
Yes, but we have so much to tell you. First of all, last Friday, we met Frankie Valli at Radio City.
Amazing. Like dream come true, like
We really weren't sure if we were ever going to get to meet him, and it was just incredible.
it was.
And we have to thank Charles Alexander, Pam Singer, and Wanda Liberti for helping us get there.
And then on the inside, Tony Valley and
Yes.
Robbie Robinson and Jackie at Radio City Music Hall. Like, wow.
Yes.
Everyone pulled it together.
It's true. It takes a village for everything, right? And
It
we'll have
only takes a
the village.
village.
Different
If
show.
you didn't hear that, we were singing It Only Takes a Village, which is a parody on It Only Takes a Moment from Hello Dolly.
Yes.
Different musical, different podcast. Stay tuned.
Also
Just
great for
kidding.
Easter, though. I put on your Sunday clothes.
Exactly.
Yes. But we will have a full story for you soon. It really wouldn't be right to tell you it without Pam and Wanda. So stay tuned. But either way, we're just so grateful that we
Check
got
these
to meet.
out.
Yes. Okay. These are
Yes,
our
these are our
backstage passes.
backstage passes. It says Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons after show. Come on. Doesn't get any better than
We have.
that.
They're already falling apart, so we really have to frame these. But we're so excited about it.
A lot of things to
And
frame.
yes. Oh yeah. And but the fact that this happened during the Lenten season means a lot too for any Christian or Catholic people. It's a very big deal. But on this Easter episode, yes, please welcome to
Jessica Rush.
the Zoom.
Jessica Rush to the Zoom studio.
So as everyone knows, Jessica Rush is a Jersey Boys and Broadway legend.
Legend.
Okay, we were so
Understudied,
happy we got to talk
yeah,
to her.
understudied Laura Benanti and Gypsy.
Yep. And Lorraine on Broadway and Jersey Boys
Played
for
Lorraine,
so
yeah.
yeah, it's pretty cool. She's really like she's a vet. It's awesome. And this is actually part one of our talk with Jessica. She was so great, and we'll have another episode with her soon. But for this one, we'll just get more into her bio, and then you'll get to
Yeah,
meet her
exactly.
in a
And
few minutes.
Jessica, she is one half of one of our favorite Broadway sweethearts, Jessica Rush and Eric Anderson, who have been booked and blessed. They've starred respectively in Waitress, Dear Evan Hansen, Moulin Rouge, Guys and Dolls, and Soul Doctor, the Shlomo Carlebach musical, which actually Natalie Gallo was in as well in one of the workshops. So that was
We
really
love
cool.
Natalie. We love crossovers.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And of course, with Jersey Boys, and that's why we're all here today. She and Eric also have a wonderful daughter named Elliot, who is killing it in musicals, just like their parents. And it's really a family effort because
The theater she's in is directed by her brother,
Yeah,
by
pretty cool.
Jessica's brother.
Yes. And Jessica's dad was a theater teacher for 36 years.
Amazing.
Incredible.
Seriously is a family business, just like you said. And she's been in some of the other biggest jukebox and bio musicals, like Beautiful the Carole King musical. She originated the
At North
role
Shore.
North Shore Music Theater, exactly. She originated the role of Rhonda Graham in Tina, the Tina Turner musical on Broadway. And she was also in Summer, the Donna Summer musical, also on Broadway, also directed by Des McAnuff.
Yeah, can't beat that.
So I think we think she knows a thing or two about the hits.
Thing.
Yeah.
Three, four, maybe five. or more, everything.
Exactly.
And she and fellow Jersey Boys vet Kara Cooper started a podcast. I'm sure you've heard of it. It's Mama's Talkin' Loud, which is all about super moms on Broadway having it all and what that means, what the successes are, what the challenges are. And it's really an incredible podcast. So please listen to it. It actually was rated one of the top 10 mom pods on
That's
Podcast Magazine.
amazing.
Yes. So Jessica is a completely wonderfully accomplished actor and just person. And we can't wait for you to meet her and learn more about her. It was a great conversation. We talked about, what it's like to be an actor after COVID. We dived into a little bit of Lorraine, more of her roots in theater, and all of the above. So we really hope that you enjoy it and let us know what you think.
Enjoy.
No. Everything's good. There's some stuff that you know that I don't know.
Which one? I think a lot of people say that to us. We
I
do our research. We do our
Yeah. You
research.
know what? You put Kara and I to shame with our podcast, to
No,
be honest.
no,
Yes. No, I was so amazed at all the research y'all had. Holy moly.
Well, thank you for saying that. That means so much, and that we're doing our jobs.
I love that. It was
Yeah.
a really special time and special show. So I love that. Thanks for having me.
Of course,
Of
thanks for
course.
coming on.
Yes, and we're actors too. So any questions we have will be coming from that perspective.
Actors,
And
yeah, we're actors, writers, musicians, so
yeah, he's a composer. He's incredible.
thank you.
Renaissance people, I do not. I do
Stop.
like one thing. Well, I do three things, but all at the same
Yes.
time.
You do them well, triple threat.
Yes, and you're
Yes.
blessed and blessed from what
Amen.
we've seen, which is amazing.
Amen.
Mostly, I mean, thank you. Yes, I would say amen to that as well, except for the last, like, it's
So,
all been crazy,
yeah.
and I'm at a different place also in the industry, so it makes the opportunities fewer. So
How do you mean? Would you want to talk about that?
sure. I mean, I have no qualms. I mean, I have no filter. So anyone who's listened to our podcast or talked to me knows that I tell everything. I'm over 40 now. I'm not far past it, but you start to move into a new sort of demographic. There aren't a lot of women or people in general over 40 in ensembles, particularly in today's climate. A lot of stuff is very youth-based, even more so than it used to be. Even not too long ago, you could play a teenager if you were still in your 30s, but now they hire like actual teenagers or, 18-year-olds to do that. So it sort of shifts everything. It happened with television too at one point. Like stars, big stars started doing guest star spots. Like movie stars came to the guest stars. So then there's this whole group of people who have been doing guest stars that moved to co-stars, and then the co-stars got shifted down. So it all sort of falls in line like that. But with me, I just think, I've worked really hard. I've been here since 08 when I made my Broadway debut in Gypsy. And luckily I was, yes, hashtag booked and blessed for all the way up until the pandemic, and then coming back from that as well. There was never a point since we've moved here, there has never been a point except in the pandemic where either myself or my husband were not in a Broadway show. And a lot of that time, both of us were. But I also have worked my way up the ranks. And the last two contracts I've done on Broadway, Dear Evan Hansen, Standing By for the Moms, and then originating the role of Rhonda Graham and Tina, those were both principal contracts. And so I've worked really hard over the years to go from the cover and the standby to being a principal player. And so it's a combination of aging out of the ensemble in a way, because our bodies hurt, and the dancing that's required nowadays is super athletic, and that's part of it. Combine it with being more picky with what opportunities I'm willing to entertain, just because I have a goal and I have set a bar for myself with what I'm willing or wanting to do these days. And then add on top of it the trifecta, like the third part of it is being a mom. Right. So, like, once you have a child or a family or people who depend on you, if you're a caregiver in some way, that also that comes into your decision making. And I have to decide, part of why I left Tina when my instead of renewing my contract post pandemic was because we came back from being away. constant togetherness for 18 months. Until that point, Elliot was 5 and a half when shutdown happened. And until that point, she had never known a time where we weren't both on 8 shows a week. So then all of a sudden we were together, and then we came back, and right away Eric was at Waitress and I was back at Tina. And our sweet girl struggled. She was in second grade. Every school year had been different. And so, and there was no sort of like easing into it. It was just like, and we're back, you know, and she was struggling, and the atmosphere was such that our theater itself had some struggles, and between those and the struggles at home and seeing Elliot, you know, flounder a little bit, luckily with Eric having the job he had at the time, Moulin Rouge, it allowed me to walk away. And I've never walked away, but there were just perspective changes, life shifts happen. And as you get older, you get to a point where you really do weigh, is it worth it and is it not? And that's where I am. Like, you know, I don't go in for tours because it has to be something really, really incredible to entertain being away for months at a time. Because I have one kiddo and she's not going to be small forever. And she's already 9 and a half. And like, I'm on borrowed time here. She's not going to want to hang out with me forever. So I got to get it in now. When she's a teenager, I'll be like, peace out. I'm going on the road, you know, but not right now.
Well, thank you so much for your honesty, because honestly, that's something we've been struggling with too, even though, you know, we're still in our 20s, but we're even thinking about, you know, if we go for national tours, if we were to be away, really, what would that mean? And do we want it? You know, right. I think that's the thing. Like 2020 made us ask the question, do we want it or how much do we want it?
Truly, truly. Okay. It was 2020, because I would never, right. Jessica pre-2020 would have never have dreamed of leaving a Broadway show unless there was another one like waiting, you know, so.
Yeah, but it's tricky. And I feel like, you know, if casting agents are going to be like, well, like, I just feel like they totally are just forgetting it or ignoring the fact that it happened. And they're like, well, if you don't want it, or if you're not going to do it, like to make it easier on us, then we're not going to cast you.
Yeah. I think we're in a really weird spot right now. You know, it's like the self-tape is when we're doing self-tapes and hiring for one medium by using another, something that we are trained to be theater actors, most of us who are going in for these jobs. I didn't train to be a film actor. Like, sure, I wouldn't say no, but I thrive on the stage. That is what I trained to do. That's what I grew up doing. And that is a specific skill set. And it doesn't always translate through a screen in your house, you know? And so that's a big frustration too, is just like figuring out, you know, come on, you guys, like there's so much, it has so much to do with an energy too of you in the room and what you feel from that team. And if the team vibes with your energy, you can bomb an audition. And if the team vibes with you, they may bring you back for the callback, or you might even book the gig when you think there's no way I book that. And then they saw, oh, they were just having an off day, but I really like them and I think they'd be great to have in the room. I mean, for real, I went in for a workshop for one role, didn't know this team at all, which rarely happens, but I went in for a workshop. They saw me and the director was like, you know what? I know we didn't give this to you, but can you read this also? Sophia Loren. I had gone in for Marilyn Monroe and they said, can you read Sophia Loren? And so it was for this Ella workshop. And I went out, I watched Sophia Loren on Johnny Carson and I worked on the stuff and I went back in and then I booked it playing both the roles. And that's something that would not have happened on a self-tape, right? Like on a self-tape, you have to be exactly what they want and read their minds and then, or they move on. You know, there's no one giving adjustments. There's no one saying, hey, you weren't quite on the money with that. Can we do it this way? Or, you know, and some of us, some of us thrive on taking direction and making adjustments.
Yes.
I would like to be back in the room to do that.
Of course, because all it takes is 2 seconds in a conversation to make a world of difference.
And yeah, Yeah. So anyway, that's like a huge tangent that's not even about Jersey.
No, but this is why we love doing this, because we end up talking about really important issues like this.
Yes, and timely things. So
yeah, I really am very passionate about it. If I could get louder on social media about how much I hate self-tapes, I would, but I fear I'm in the minority, so I have to like keep my mouth shut. But
honestly, yeah. I don't, you know, you might be more in the majority than you think you are.
Not for stage actors. I think.
Really?
I think. No. I mean, for you, Jessica, I feel like with.
Yeah, you're not in the minority.
Film and TV. That's fine. Yeah. I mean, I still would like to go in and let you. I always liked it when they would give you direction and give you a couple different takes so that they could do it. But like, at least for theater, come on, you guys, come on. So anyway, it's a whole. Also, I feel like get off my lawn, like an old lady, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, we will mow your lawn for you.
Well, that's a Jersey Boys connection right there with Clint Eastwood with the movie. So perfect.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He came to see the show when he was casting that. That's what. Yeah, I'm sure you know that
because Michael LaMenda told us that.
Yeah.
He came. He had come to see the show.
Did you get to talk to him? How'd it go?
I mean, we all took like a picture with him or something. You know.
Yeah.
Clearly, I did not. Leave as much of an impression as I would have hoped.
No,
I know. It's, you know, it's also, it's crazy, you know, and it was fun that Erica got to reprise, you know, the role that she created.
Kylie got to do it.
Yes, Kylie did. Kylie wasn't in our company. I mean, she came in towards the end, but at that point she wasn't there. It was Renee was in and it was Katie and Sarah and I, because Kara was on maternity leave, I'm pretty sure.
So when did Candy come in with you guys?
Candy came in 2011, if I'm not mistaken, because when I started, it was 2010. So shall I tell the whole thing?
Yes, please.
Okay. So I mentioned that I made my debut in 2008 and I was doing Gypsy. And that was when they were first auditioning for like the first round of replacements. It's when Erica was going to leave this. And so I went in and auditioned, but I was in Gypsy and I couldn't get out. I had a, you know, whatchamadoodle, a writer, not a writer. What is it? A 6 month. Yeah. Writer. Anyway. So I couldn't leave except for a principal contract at that point. Okay. And so I couldn't go anywhere, but I had auditioned, and that's when I first met Dez, and Sergio. And then that would have been early in the year of 2008, because after 6 months, I didn't sign another writer. So I was able to leave. And I actually auditioned for Guys and Dolls that Dez was directing and Sergio was doing in that time, in the fall. And Mary Sugarman had come and seen me when I went on, one of the dozens of times I went on in Gypsy. And I happened to be on that week that I auditioned for Guys and Dolls. Now stay with me. So at this point, he'd seen me for Jersey Boys and they had been interested. They'd actually called my agents for me to replace Erica. And my agents were like, she can't get out of the show. So they moved Heather Ferguson up. That's when Heather moved out of the swing spot into Lorraine. And so then I was doing the Guys and Dolls audition and Mary was like, Jessica's actually on as Louise this week. And Dez was like, really? He said, well, my office is in that theater. I'd like to see that. And I sort of was like, ha ha, that's funny. Well, then I got a call the next day. And my agent was like, Dez Makanoff is going to come see you be Louise. And I was like, what? And he came. He came and he talked to me afterwards. And we talked about Guys and Dolls and this and that. And then I was hired in the ensemble of Guys and Dolls. I was the only one person, the only female that was in the Hot Box and in the Mission.
Right. Yeah. There's that, the picture of you at the Tonys standing next to Titus in the Mission.
Yes. So I was Martha in the Mission and Dez put me in these massive Coke bottle glasses because he said I had to be uglier. I mean, if that's not Dez. So like,
God.
He put me in these massive Coke bottle glasses for Martha. And then I obviously didn't wear them in Hot Box, but, that dance callback was crazy too, because I know myself, I'm a strong mover. Like I usually clean up at the movement call, but I'm not going to a dance call. And after I had done the movement call for the cover spots, Sergio, they said, Sergio wants you to come to the final dancer callback. And I was like, no. And they're like, no, he knows. He just wants to see how far you can go. So I went in and everyone's doing these like insane combos and you've got John Celia and Jen Seven, you know, Lauren Lataro, and you're like all these, Brooke Wendell, all these incredible Broadway dancers. And I'm standing there, and all I had to do was the Havana stuff. Mm-hmm. And so we did through that, and then I got it. So I'm in Guys and Dolls. I do the show with them, everything. And then what happens is, sorry, my husband's calling. So then that closed very fast. It did not have a long run. So it closed in right after the, literally we got our call the Monday after the Tonys. And I got it on a voicemail that we were closing on Sunday. That was very fast.
Wow. 1 week? Yeah.
Was that from the company hotline?
1 week. I mean, it was company manager. What had happened was, oh, it was funny because my dad, who was a high school theater teacher, who I'm sure we talk about. So my dad would bring a group of kids here every year, and he had brought them to watch, to see the Tonys and see shows. And I was on the subway headed down. My best friend, Michael James Scott, was teaching a master class for them. And I was headed down to like Ripley or something, to Chelsea Studios, RIP, like to meet up with them. And when I got off the subway, this was the Monday after the Sunday night of the Tonys, I got off the subway and I had a voicemail, and it was like, I'm sorry to leave this on your voicemail, but we have to get word out to the public. We didn't have the bump we had hoped for, and this Sunday will be our final performance. This Sunday. It was 1 week. 1 week notice. So that was that. So that was in the summer of 09. Cut to, then I did some regional stuff, summer of 2010. And my agents got a call from Mary Sugarman. And she said, would Jessica be interested in taking over as Lorraine?
Hey.
And she was like, she might have to re-audition because it's been, you know, 2 years since they saw her. Now, mind you, I just done the show a year before. I'd done Guys and Dolls with them. And luckily enough, when they asked Des and Sergio, they were like, no, it's fine. Just offer it to her. And yeah, and I remember where I was when I booked it, and just thinking like, thank you, God, hallelujah, government gig.
Government gig, exactly.
Yes, and I was just like, I'm going to stay in there until they drag me out. That's what I was saying, you know.
Wow.
And I did.
Amen.
Basically.
Wow. Basically.
Yeah, so this, round of applause this is for that incredible.
Fucking loot.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
So this is because obviously the three main long haulers, OG original cast, Mark Letito, Peter Gregus, and Sarah Schmidt. But if you think about it, some of the other long haulers, including you, Jessica, Matt Bogart,
Katie O'Toole. Katie was there before I was. Yeah.
Right.
And oh, that's how we started this. You were asking me when Candy came in.
When Candy came in, right. Yeah, right.
So when I joined in 2010, the vacation swing at that point was Michelle Aravena. And okay. Michelle and I have been friends since the year 1999, since the last century, when we did Disney Cruise Line together. So we've now, yeah. So like, she was a dear friend. She was the vacation swing at that point, and then she left, and Lauren Tartaglia was for a while. So maybe Candy didn't come in until like 2012. It was a year or so, I think, into my run. You know when it was? I mean, I remember when she got there because she was thrown on last minute because I'd forgotten it was a 7 o'clock show and I was late. And I got there at 6:47, and Michelle Bosch told me that I was not going to be going on. It's quite the story that I should probably just keep to myself these days. But, you know, it just was one of those things. I like ran from Astoria. I was like putting lashes on the subway. My flip flops broke and I ran barefoot from the N train stop to the theater. And like, oh, it was insane. And because I knew Candy had not been on yet. She had just joined us. Like, her costumes were in boxes. They didn't have anything of hers prepped. And I thought, for sure, there's no way they're going to like, I'm hauling ass, you know. So I mean, I guess we can cuss. We just did. So like, I'm hauling ass.
Yeah.
And I throw the door open, and it's 6:47 or something. And Bosch is like, "I'm putting Candy on. You're late." And I was like, "Oh, geez." So then Candy got a Broadway debut. I'm pretty sure that was 2012. If I'm not, okay. Summer of 2012. Yeah.
Well, that's a crazy story. Well, a few things. So, do you still live in Astoria? We live here.
No. Where do you live?
We live on 30th and Crescent, right down the street from the 30th Ave stop. So
yeah.
We,
You too?
Because
we were at right pat on 30th Street, just past Broadway. Like, oh, Dino's Pizza nice. Is right there. We were in one of those two family houses.
Oh, nice.
Playbill, yeah. You guys did that photo thing for Playbill where you took photos of your two show days, and you guys were at Sanford's.
Sanford's was our place. I was in labor in Sanford's.
Really?
Yes. Sanford's before, like, y'all are babies. So, like, Sanford's pre their fire, pre, like, renovation. You could go there in the morning and get an omelet with anything you want in it, toast, potatoes, coffee, and juice for $10.
No oh my God, way. They're so fucking expensive so now.
I know. Eric and I used to go there every morning. Every morning we went to Sanford's. Aww. It was our place. And still, when we go back, like, he and Elliot went back last summer when they went to Museum of Moving Image, and Stacy, like, one of our favorite servers, was there, and she was like, hot. Aww. I mean, Elliot, I mean, they've watched, I was pregnant. Literally, I was in labor and we went to breakfast, and I was like, maybe our other server, Mario, he was like, I think you should do something about that, because it was like having contractions. That was a whole thing. So yes, we were in Astoria, but we're on the Upper West Side now. We found a COVID unicorn. We were in Inwood for years. Coming back from the pandemic, that was another thing. It's like, we have to leave Inwood, and we need outdoor space, and we don't want to go to the burbs. Like, in fact, on my, like, 40th birthday, I had a big, like, breakdown of, like, but I still have it. Like, I want to live in a brownstone and take her to school and then go for a walk in Central Park and get coffee in a cute place. And, like, just such a bougie, bitchy, like, could you even stand it? But that's what I want. I was like, I wanted to live in a Nancy Meyers film. Like, I was like, that's what I want.
Jessica, we're
So anyway, yeah. I manifested the shit out of it, and we found this apartment. And now they are going to have to drag me out of it. But
yeah. Wow. Well, good for you. That's amazing.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks. And Eric, like, he's got a garden, so he's, like, growing all, you know, he's
perfect. Yeah.
Amazing. Oh, well, hopefully we can get there one day.
Yeah, you got time. I wasn't there when I was in my 20s.
Right. Yeah. No one is. It's too much. Yeah.
We are manifesting the same journey as Jessica Rush and Eric Anderson.
I'm here for it.
Wonderful. But so you had a key quote there with government gig.
There was a while where we had several what we call government gigs on Broadway, right? Like, Wicked is still here, and it's one. Lion King, still here. But, like, Phantom, Jersey Boys at that point, because it'd been running for 4 years. I mean, and nowadays, so few things run. I mean, more than a few months, if a year even. So, you know, we sort of jokingly call them that, because you would know that you're probably set for a little while, and you can take a breath and you can relax. And you know, I remember when Kara joined the show, Kara had been like an urban cowboy and like all shook up and all these shows and that didn't last very long. And she was, I remember she got to us in January of 2011. And in like February of that year, they put up the calendar for the holidays at the end of the year. And I remember her being like, oh my God, they've already scheduled the holiday shows like that. They just know we're going to be here. Like, you know, that kind of stability that we can plan our holidays because they already are planning them, because they don't plan on us going anywhere, you know? And so with that, you know, I was able, I'm very thankful for it. Looking back as a wiser, older person, I probably would not have stayed as long as I did at the time in my life that it was. Like, I was 29 when I got the show, and I was 36 when it closed. And while it gave me great stability, especially because my husband was doing flop after flop after flop, like he was like, he hit it and then just was like one show. And then, I mean, one year he did 3 new Broadway shows because they just weren't lasting. You know, it was like, or like he opened Kinky Boots and then he did Soul Doctor. And then he went into Rocky. And then, you know, it was just like Last Ship. Like, there were a couple years there where it was just like, oh God, you know. And I was able to hold down the fort, and we got married. We had our wedding. And then I actually didn't get pregnant when I was in the show. I had left. I had been there for 3 years. And I had said, Katie always talks about this. What? P.S. Katie, Sarah, Kara, and I are on a Marco Polo that has been going since the show closed in January of 2017. And we talk to each other every day. Like, I had to get on there today and say, y'all, what do they mean by the merry-go-round scene? And then and then I figured, as I was saying it, I was like, oh, wait, I have that line. I have to go off the merry-go-round. That's what it is. And like, I had to ask Katie, like, fight call. I never went to fight call. Like, what was in the fight call? Do you know what I mean? Like, and so anyway, we talk every day about our kids or whatever. Yeah. So anyway, Katie always talks about how I was in the dressing room and I said, something's got to give. I either have to book a Broadway show and be a principal, a new show, or I have to get pregnant. And I was like, so what would really work great? I was like, this was in the summer. I was like, if I could book like a couple regional shows and get pregnant in the middle of that, so that then I would have my work weeks for my health insurance, because that's something that's not fierce. And I would have enough work weeks then that I would have health insurance through the rest of my pregnancy. And then maybe I could even like come back to the show. But I booked Elf at Tut's and Gypsy at Chicago Shakes. And so I left the show at the end of October of 2013 and went to do Elf, and I got pregnant while I was doing that show, and then went and did Chicago Shakes. And when I closed that in March, I was 16 weeks pregnant. So at that point, Katie Weber had replaced me. That's happened a couple times, she and I, and she had replaced me at Jersey Boys. But she had missed Rock of Ages. And so it was almost 6 months and she was gonna go back to Rock of Ages. And Bosch, Michelle Bosch, had said, I went to the theater the night we announced my pregnancy to tell everybody, because they were my family. It was like, you know, and until Kara had a baby, there was not a mom in the building. Like, there were lots of dads, but no moms, right? So I wanted to go share it. And Bosch was like, well, I thought I could just ask you to come back to work, but now you're pregnant, so that's not gonna happen. So that's when Kirsten Scott came in. So anyway, I was not in a show, and then it just so happened that Kirsten left and Elliot was 5 months old and I was able to go back. So like, it worked out, but Katie always says, she goes, you said this is what you wanted to do, and then you did it. You had the two shows and then you had the baby and then you came back. I mean, well, yeah. Visualize it, y'all. Visualize it.
Seriously. Well, thank you for being that example, because that's pure like strategy and manifestation.
You never know what's going to come true.
You never know, but you have to be specific. This is something I tell my friends, because we talk a lot about manifestation and visualization, and you have to be specific with your manifestation.
You're just so smart about it. And that's what's so helpful to hear, because all we hear all the time is it's just everyone's opinions, and it's just getting a little—
Everyone's having a horrible time.
Yeah, like the hope isn't there.
I mean, it's hard.
No, of course. No.
But I also recognize the privilege that I have with having a partner who is as successful as he is. Mm-hmm. Now, not for nothing, I always tell him that I married him on purpose because he is a character man and I knew he would always work.
Yep.
Yeah.
Unlike those ingenue boys, you know, who start to age.
Yep.
I'm just saying. No, I mean, sort of. That's what I always say. But, you know, there's some truth to that. And so luckily, like, he does hold down the fort right now. You know, I held it down at Jersey Boys for a while, and now he's holding it down for us. And right. And I am. I recognize that, yeah, that there's some privilege with that, and I appreciate it from the universe. So.
We saw him in Moulin Rouge. He was phenomenal.
Yes.
Thank you.
He was born to play Zidler.
Well, he did.
Literally.
I mean, I don't know if you know that story, but yeah, he did until the out of town in Boston. When
I know, then Danny Burstein did it. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because he had it all lined up, and then and he was the only person who'd been with it since the very first table read when Cynthia Erivo did Satine. I mean, they went through several Satines, and right. He'd been with it the whole time, and he was supposed to do it and Pretty Woman, like ping-ponging it, and then Pretty Woman changed their Broadway dates from the fall opening to a summer opening, and that took him out of Boston. And so then, you know, then they replaced him with Danny, and of course, you know, he and Danny are buds, so like, it, you know, and it all works the way it's supposed to. But you know, it was definitely, that was, you know, this one of those moments in the business where you're like, damn. Yeah. You know, but yeah, I'm so glad he got to go back for the couple years that he was there just now. So
yeah,
hey, awesome. Well, we're so glad too, but we had to make it a point to see him before he
left. Yes, seriously.
Thank you.
Yeah. And
I also saw him in Soul Doctor before Broadway.
This is what I read on your research, your incredible research. that you saw him in Miami.
Miami at the Colony Theater. That's where my mom's, it used to be a movie theater. My mom saw it when Harry Met Sally 10 times in that theater, but they turned they turned it into a theater, stage theater. And they did it there. And I have a personal connection to Shlomo Carlebach. My bar mitzvah teacher and his brother are Eli Chaim's nephew. Oh. So, and the brother, he runs the famous Carlebach Synagogue on the Upper West
Side. It's right here by my house.
Yeah.
It's near, I drove past it today. Yeah. That's incredible. Yeah, I mean, that was, talk about a journey. That was a journey, that show. We just walked past that theater. He and I went to Miami for like 3 days, the top of February before he started. And we walked past it. And it's wild to just think of the life that has happened since then and the journey that he went on with that show. It was crazy. He actually went to Israel for 2 weeks. The director, producer/producer, Danny Wise, took him. And, you know, yeah, like he went to Israel. He was in the Dead Sea. They were at a wedding, like on the overlooking like Jerusalem. I mean, it was just like, it was. And then he went to Shlomo's, oh my God, I'm blanking. What's it called? Moshav.
Oh, okay.
And they dropped him off there and he spent the Sabbath with a family on the Moshav. And then like all the men were like shuckling with him there and like blessing him to play Shlomo. My husband is not Jewish, but he came home and he was like, he was maybe phenomenal. We should be Jewish.
Are you kidding? He was phenomenal.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah. I mean, that show was, it was something else, but I will say he was, and Amber was great when it, you know, Broadway too. And yeah, I hate that more people didn't get to see him do it because, you know, there are times where we're carrying things right on our backs, carrying various shows, and they don't always live up to what we hope they can be, but the work we do in them is impactful and meaningful. And that was some of his best work. I will admit, I think so as well.
Phenomenal. I remember where I was sitting. You know, he was really good. And also Natalie Gallo was in a workshop of it too.
That's what you said. He joined it for the Miami. Like he didn't do workshops before
this,
it.
Yeah, this was pre Miami, I think.
Yeah.
We interviewed her. She told us that was.
Oh, really, wow. Cool. I didn't know that. We've never talked about that. Yeah.
Well, yay, more conversation starters. Yeah. Well, speaking of Miami, are you from Florida?
Not originally. Originally, I'm from Texas, Southeast Texas. Orange is the name of my tiny town. But we moved to Orlando when I was in the eighth grade. So
we saw.
We're both Floridians.
We're both Floridians. She's from Boca. I'm from Miami.
Yes, and I went to UCF. So go Knights. I
love Cardinal. Oh, hey.
And we saw your Alamont Mall commercial.
Ah, life isn't just black and white, and neither am I. Yeah.
Life isn't just black and white, and neither am I. I love life in living color, zany, bright, and bold. But I do have a softer side, a side reserved for special moments. Altamont Mall, no matter which side of me I want to be.
Amazing.
I was in the eighth grade.
Wow.
I was in eighth grade when I did that. So cool. Yeah. Yeah.
So talk about a little bit about your upbringing in theater. So your dad was a theater teacher. What high school?
Well, West Orange. Well, also Dr. Phillips. So like when we first moved to Orlando, I was in eighth grade, and my freshman year, my dad got a job teaching at Dr. Phillips, and I was also at Dr. Phillips, and that's where I met Michael, who I mentioned earlier, Michael James Scott. Mm-hmm. And then halfway through my sophomore year, my dad was hired to open a musical theater magnet program in San Antonio as an administrator, like build the program and open it. And there was a massive renovation happening. That school is still going. It's called Northeast School of the Arts. I know some people have gone there. Like I've run into people who were there. And we moved back to Texas, but to San Antonio for him to do that. And I actually went to a regular public high school the second half of my I went to four high schools the second half of my sophomore year, and while we waited for the school to be ready. And then my junior year, I went to this magnet school in Texas, and my dad was the administrator. And then he hated being an administrator. He'd been a high school theater teacher at that point for like 20 some odd years, and he didn't like being an administrator. And so we moved back to Florida. But this time, instead of going to Dr. Phillips, he went and was teaching at West Orange, which is where I graduated from. So that was my fourth high school.
Wow.
Yeah. 3 years. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And where was that picture that you posted of you and your dad in Fiddler together? What production?
That was in Beaumont, Texas. So Beaumont is 30 minutes from Orange. It's like it has the mall. Like, it's the closest town with a mall. And it's halfway between Houston and Orange, basically, or, you know, to give you like an idea of Orange is right on the border with Louisiana. It's in the swamp. It's like Cajun country. It is, you know, but that was in Beaumont Community Players, a historical theater called the Jefferson Theater. It was an old vaudeville house. Mae West performed there. And actually that stage is where I was on stage for the first time when I was 10 weeks old. In another production of Fiddler, my father was playing Mottle the tailor at that point.
And so
I was the baby. And my mother was stage managing, because my parents met in the theater department in college. So we all are theater people. And yeah, but that was when I played Bielka and I was 8.
Yeah.
And my dad was Tevye. And then that was in Beaumont. The third time I did Fiddler, I was Chava, but that was all in my like region, my community theater days, you know.
Gotcha. And you also did Into the Woods, you did Hello Dolly.
Yes, yes. Those were things. I mean, growing up, the community theater is where I got so much of my training and my just feeling sense of community and all these aunts that I had and uncles and awesome adult. I mean, I was around adults my whole life. And my brother's 6.5 years younger than I am. And so by the time he was old enough to do anything, I was almost out of the house. The only time we did shows together, like all of us, dad and I would often do shows together, and mom would stay home with Ben because he was little and, you know, and he was a baby. And so dad and I would go off and do, you know, King and I, which also, though my brother did do that with, no one can ever see the photos because this was a different time, right? Like, we have to remember this is what it used to be. We did a King and I, and my father was the king and I was one of the wives and my brother played my son. So that was the, like, Ben was at that point, I think Ben was like 7 and I was 13. And so that was our last thing we all did together. No. Yes, it was a very different time, as we all know. I'm glad we're not doing that anymore. But we also had done Into the Woods at Community Theater in Orlando. When I was in high school, I did that. My dad played Mysterious Man, and my brother was his dresser because he needed a dresser. It was community theater, so like it's not like they had dressers all lying around. So my brother at that time, he was, I think, 9, because I was 15. He was my daughter's age. And he was dressing my dad. And you know who else was in that with me? Quentin Darrington. Who just was in MJ and like,
okay.
He was also in Ragtime. Yeah.
Okay.
Ragtime. He was Cole House in the Ragtime revival. He played the wolf in Cinderella's Prince, and I was Little Red. And so we've known each other for a long time. It's always fun when we run into each other. Yeah. Yeah. That's so cool. That's where I grew up doing it and like hanging around my dad's school, like for rehearsal after school, you know, before I went to dance class. I would ride the school bus to the high school and get off, and then he would be rehearsing his students doing, like, you know, Star Spangled Girl or Fences or whatever, Steel Magnolias, Crucible, whatever. Like, you know, they didn't do musicals, they only did plays, and so they would always be rehearsing, and then after rehearsal he'd drive me to dance class, and then I was there till 9 and then we'd go home, or we would drive to Beaumont for rehearsal, you know, and we'd drive through McDonald's, and you know,
that's it. Yes. That's
I did the same thing after rehearsal every day. I went to McDonald's with my mom.
Yes.
Quintessential.
Yeah.
The community theater, kids school theater life.
Yeah.
Quintessential.
Yeah. I love it. I'm sad that like we don't have that kind of community theater aspect like here for Elliot, because she loves doing stuff and like she goes every summer and does theater with my brother at his school, but like we don't have that kind of where people are doing it for fun, right? Here there's just always stakes, and like there's not even, you couldn't even do it for fun if you wanted to, really, you know, you have to like go live out in the burbs to do it for fun.
I do know of one theater on the east side that's a community theater.
Really?
Yeah. Here, I'll find it. I'll send it
you have
to
you. Send it to me.
Well, I know we only have you for another 15 minutes.
You can go over. I mean, Elliot, she's fine. If we go over, it's fine. It's not a big deal. Don't stress about it.
Let's go to Lorraine.
Let's go to Lorraine. Here we go.
Ooh, nice little segue. There you go.
There you go.
You still got it.
Thank you.
And so just, you know, whenever we talk about the characters, because we know this is a biographical musical, we know that, you know, sometimes the characters are a composite of different people who existed, and that's Lorraine was a composite of different people. So whenever we ask questions, it's more about the character and not
the real life people.
We just always like to say that so our guests know and so our audience knows. Can you tell us how you and some of your fellow Lorraines were directed to play Lorraine? Because usually the Lorraines that we've seen have been like soft-spoken, but also with an edge to them. Mm-hmm. So how were you directed to play Lorraine?
I would say, well, here's what I will say, and this might inform a lot of that answer, is that I was told when I started performances, I remember Michelle Aravena, who was our vacation swing at the time, saying to me, I can't believe they're letting you do it that way. Because she said they would never, she's like, I can't believe they're letting you be, because I would put a hand up to him. I don't know if y'all saw me or how often or.
We both saw you live.
Yes, closing show.
So I put a hand up. I seem to recall, like he wants to step to me or something happens. And I put a hand up like, no, don't do that. Y'all, sorry, it's been a lot of years now, so I don't even remember the line. But I remember Michelle specifically saying, I can't believe they let you put your hand up like that. Because when you're a replacement in a lot of shows, now I think nowadays it's becoming a little more lax because everyone is too scared to, you know, take away people's like autonomy or what they're doing or the work they're doing, or whatever. But like your job as a replacement, oftentimes you're told you walk to this point and you go to here and then you get it on this line and then you go to 8 and then you cross on blah, blah, blah. Like it's been set, right? Like you have to respect the fact that there are people who've been doing this show however many times, in Jersey Boy's case, for 5 years at that point when I came in. So you can only do so much to sort of make it your own. But I will say that apparently I had more edge than most Lorraines. Apparently, I was given more agency, more, you know, more freedom to, I wasn't told no, basically. Like I came in, I read it the way I read it and played it the way I played it. And no one told me you can't do that. But I was told by company members, oh, I'm surprised you're able to do it that way or with that much backbone, sort of standing up, like being that forceful with my contrary, you know, attitude towards Frankie and the shit I was giving him, essentially.
Was it during the scene?
It was in the packing scene.
In the packing scene, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, it was in the packing scene. Before
a quick
AKA the merry-go-round scene. The packing scene is much
the packing scene.
More direct.
There's this girl, Erica Mansfield, who's been around for years too. We're like the same generation. And I saw her in an audition the other day and she was like, I thought of you last year. She said, I finally did Jersey Boys. Cause you know, the thing about us sitting in those roles for so long was that nobody else could come here and do it, really. Like, you know, the great thing about the roles in Jersey Boys for the women is that they feel like principals. The truth is, every role in that show should have been a principal with regard to stage time and what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
Now, the rules of being a principal are that you can only do one more thing than your character, right? So when you're playing all these different characters, technically, they don't have to make you a principal. It's an ensemble track, but I think that's all bullshit. But anyway, That's what happened and that's what it was. So, but what it does is it helps you to feel like you are a principal. There was one of those things where there were other shows I did readings of or workshops or I would be called about. And I was like, why am I going to go sing and dance in the ensemble? Nothing against it. I mean, I love it. But why am I going to leave a show where I have three scenes? I am an actual character. People can hear me speak. I have scenes that add to the production and the story. And I get to do that. Like, why would I then go just sing and dance in an ensemble and leave it, you know? Because it did feel like something more. And so there are tons of people who wish we had left those jobs so many times.
Right. Yeah. You had the job to get.
It's funny because people, when I meet people, they'll be like, did you know so-and-so? Like if they were in Jersey Boys, I was like, no. And they're like, oh, I could have sworn they did it. I was like, well, they didn't do Broadway. I mean, I don't mean to be like bitchy, but it's that thing of like, I was there for 6 years. So
exactly.
They were probably on the tour because I was there for most people.
The only.
You were tenured.
Exactly.
Yes.
The only other opportunities for that in the United States were Chicago, which
Chicago's still there, government gig.
That one only ran for maybe 3 or 4 years though, but then also Vegas. Right. I mean, Travis Clower was there.
Oh, you mean Chicago, the Jersey Boys, Chicago.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, Chicago.
Well, of course, yeah.
Yes.
Rachel Shirchase. God bless her.
Yeah.
Seriously. We love her.
Although, you know, us girls can't make up these singing groups and get the tours and the bookings, like all the Midtown Men and the this and the that. Like there's like 4 offshoots. I love these boys, but I tell you what.
Literally one.
No, but you're so right. And just so you know, like, so especially like, no, well, from both of us, we put the Jersey Girls, like we always give them the credit where it's due. It's insane how many tracks
52 had. 52 roles between the three of
52.
You
50 fucking two.
52. Yeah, I had 14 costume changes. I always talk about that because when you do a show, I had like 2700 performances or something. Like when I added them all up, it was like 2700 shows and 14 costume changes a show. And then I was like, that means I changed my and wig. Every time I changed my costume, I changed my wig. And it was like, that's 40,000 times I was doing, and you do it the same way. Like you don't, you know, you don't change which leg you start with in your clothes. Like you're always, but 14 changes a show. That was the Lorraine track has the most.
That reminds me,
God bless.
That reminds me of a picture you posted. This one with you guys at the 20-minute hold. I have a question about this though, because everyone here is wearing summer costumes except for Richard H. Blake. Cause that's cry for me.
Cause he probably had not changed yet. That was right before we were going up to do short shorts.
So when did the show, what do you remember at what point the show stopped?
It stopped before short shorts. And that changes very fast. That changes very fast for us. So whatever was right before short shorts.
It's after Ape and Tommy's introducing Bob. And yes. So he is still wearing
his
spring. Yeah, so it's right before summer.
Yeah, because normally we put those short shorts costumes on and run up the stairs and come across for short shorts and then take them right back off. Like normally there's no way we would have had time to take a picture in that moment.
Right, of course. And so he's the only one on stage for that right before short shorts.
Yeah, exactly.
A kid who sings, plays, and writes, you just hit the trifecta.
Right.
Yep. I haven't heard that line in so long.
You said trifecta earlier.
I did say trifecta. I didn't even mean to.
I'm telling you, this Jersey vocabulary as it is, it stays with you.
Yes, and you said something similar to everyone remembers it how they need to.
Oh, really?
And I was watching, do you know the TV show Black Lightning? It's one of the CW DC superhero shows. And there's a line. It goes, Evelyn, I taught you everything you know, not everything I know.
Yeah.
I literally just watched it today.
Amazing.
I'm telling you.
That's good.
Follows meant to you. Be. Meant to fucking be. But a couple more things about Lorraine.
Yeah.
Yeah. How when you're interviewing everyone, how choreographed is the writing in the notebook versus just watching them?
Especially none of it's choreographed.
Wow, it was kind of just all.
At least for me, it wasn't choreographed. I mean, I don't think it was. No one tried to give me choreography. It wasn't like I was like, no. They just were like, and you're standing here, and you have the notebook, and then you just, you know,
natural with it. Just do what you. Because you just never know, especially with Broadway shows, like how.
Right, and there are some, like Dear Evan Hansen is the opposite of that. Dear Evan Hansen was very like, you pull the letter out of your bag on this line, you open it on this, you hand it on this. Like there is, and that's the thing. Some shows are super specific in that way, and then some give you a little leeway. And there's usually leeway given to people who are taking over tracks, right, to a certain degree. I mean, like I said before, you have to honor what's been set, but there's usually a little wiggle room when you take over as opposed to being an understudy or a cover. But like for sure, when I was standing by at Dear Evan Hansen, it was very choreographed. Everything within an inch of its life was like, you step on this and you do this and you gesture on this spot and blah, 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 blah. But like the writing in the notebook at Lorraine was just me, whenever.
Love it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And also like the packing, like the folding and the packing.
Yeah.
No, I just did it, but I had my own way that I did it every night, right? Like you just get to the point where you have your routine of what you do. I also thought it was always, it drove me crazy that I was packing these. First off, there was a dress that I was packing, you guys. Lorraine would never wear. Do you know what I mean? It literally, and one day I said something about it and they were like, oh, well, we just brought that out for, like they just brought it out during tech and then no one ever changed it. That kind of stuff happens all the time, y'all. Like people are like, oh, well, we'll just throw this at them right now and they can use this. And they eventually think they'll get back to it. They didn't get back to it. So I had like a negligee and a negligee and then this like heavy, like polyester A-line. You know what I mean? It was like the weirdest thing. I was like, why is this? And also I'm packing all this into a hat box. You know, that also bothered me because I was like, it's a hat box.
Why? Well, it's a hat box.
It's not a suitcase. It's a hat box.
Well, okay. Thank you for saying this because, okay. Because my whole thing is I love, of course, love watching anything 60s. And I love the, like the circular luggage, but it is just a hat box. Like there was circular luggage though, right? Back in the day.
I mean, I always assumed if it's circular, it was a hat box.
I think you just blew my mind.
I've never thought of them as being circular back in the day and being anything other than a hat box.
Right.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. It just always bothered me. And I guarantee you they chose the hat box because that looked better than her carrying a suitcase, right? Like it looks so much more feminine with the handle and the way I would carry it. It next to this tall body, then you just have this light colored hat box with a delicate handle as opposed to like a big suitcase that also, because Nick's going to carry a suitcase or has already carried the suitcase or when he leaves, right? Like Eric's been teching Gatsby right now and that's its own thing. You know, every show, there's so much. The shows have just gotten so massive and there's so much. And like every department wants to have their little nods to the craft and they want to have their little Easter eggs of sorts and things like that. But at the same time, the to-do list is massive, right? And something's going to slip through the cracks. That's sure. Whether it's conscious or not.
Right.
Right.
Right. So. Who's gonna bring it up and who what's the process of who has to.
Right. And then who's going to say, hey, I don't think what you did here is.
Right. I
don't really agree with it.
And then you end up with a hat box.
But like, even the fact that Des put me in Coke bottle glasses in the mission and got, do you know what I'm saying? Like it's a visual it's about a picture and a look, you know?
Is there any situation where Lorraine stays with Frankie? You know, from her perspective, what could he have done to change?
Yeah, like could there have been an alternate ending for them? Like, did you ever think about that?
I don't think so. I think that she doesn't respect him at the end of the day, right? After the bullshit and after it's all happening over and over again. And I think she's a smart cookie. And I think she realized, like, I have to put an end to this or it's going to just continue forever. I don't think he's not going to, you know, make it better and make himself better and do the growth, at least not at that point in his life. Right. I mean, like, maybe later on, maybe, you know, the Frankie that we all know now, you know, who's 90, whatever, you know, I'm sure he's had some growth. But that Frankie at that time, I've never considered that Lorraine would have stayed. I feel like he was a passing, like, it was fun. Literally, I think when she says, you know, it's been fun or whatever I said, like, I feel like that's literally how she felt. She was smart. She was a journalist. She had her own stuff going on. And especially for a woman in that time, like, the empowerment that she would feel from being in control of her own life, having her own money. You know, this is a woman who was not looking for someone to take care of her. She had her own shit. She had her own money. She supported herself. She was smart. And I think that she saw this man who maybe she woke up and she's like, she's a feminist back in the day, being like, I don't need, why am I here? Why am I doing this? Why do I keep going around and around with this person who's clearly not going to make it better and fix himself and make this relationship work? I'm sure there's somewhere else I can find it. You know, someone who she would feel was her equal in all the ways. That's at least how I am. Like, I don't want to be with someone who I don't respect. So, and I feel like Lorraine would have been the same way. She would have been like, screw this.
I love that.
Yeah,
that's what I think.
Yay. Well, thank you. Well, and that's what's great too, is that, you know, you brought yourself to the role. And because we've talked to other Lorraines and everyone's had like different, like just different ideas, or maybe like if this one scene was a little bit different, then maybe it would impact the ending.
Interesting. I sort of want to go listen to their answers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Erica.
Tristan.
Who
was that New World Stages?
Oh, Tristan. She's sweet. I just want to say something real fast before we go, because since this was like Jersey Boys centric, in case we move on to something else later on another episode or whatever. But like, you had asked on there about how many two girl shows there were. There was ever only one two girl show on Broadway in 11 years.
That's amazing.
One. Yeah. And it was 3 weeks after I started. That was when Bridget was there. Mm-hmm. And Bridget had to go on a medical leave. And Lauren Tartaglia was our vacation suite. Yes. So, okay. Aravena was leaving and then Tartaglia came in. And Tartaglia had a personal day for a week that she was supposed to be covering as our swing. And Bridget couldn't come in. She had no voice and she had to take a medical absence leave, and Lauren wasn't there. And so Katie O'Toole and I did a two girl show for the first and only time ever on Broadway. I'd been there 3 weeks, and I bowled with John Tall. I forget. He was not there. He's now a doctor, like in DC or some shit. Like, he's really fancy, but like, I bowled with him. We had like a bowling date. So instead of two girls bowling, it was two boys. Okay. I mean, a girl and a boy. Right. Yeah. And then I did the waitress dance that Lorraine normally is not in. And then there was no Francine. So I did the call. This is why
stage, right?
Yeah. I did the call off stage and then just walked on as Lorraine for the next, in that next scene. Yeah, we did it.
Yeah, Katie told us about this.
I love it. I mean, yeah, it was the only time we ever did. And, you know, not for nothing. Part of that is because this is another tangent that I could go off on, but like, there's a lack of respect sort of permeating throughout the industry a little bit with regard to like the camaraderie and the team effort that it is to put on a show and to do a show and make sure you show up for each other. If you're able to, right? If you absolutely can't or you're sick, whatever, but like, the scale of sickness now feels very low, right? The bar is very low. Yeah. And I think that people Not for nothing. 11 years, there was only one day where there were only two girls in that building and we didn't have to do a cut track show. That's because we would say to each other, okay, well, I have this thing. Even if there was something that we were going to have to call out sick for, you know, like that was not, maybe someone booked something. We would say to each other, hey, I booked this TV thing and I'm filming it on whatever. And we would make sure that the other three were going to be there, you know, and between us and Michelle Bosch also making sure, our production stage manager, that, you know, I mean, they didn't give us personal days at the same time or things like that. But like, there was an effort made for it to be the show that people were expecting. Because that's the thing. When you do a cut show, when you cut tracks, that's a different show, no matter whether you think it's noticeable or not. I mean, in this show particularly, it was noticeable, right? So anyway, we're very proud. Kara and Katie and Sarah and I were talking about that on Marco Polo today. We were just like super proud that like we never had another cut show. It happened in 2010 and it didn't happen again. And Katie said to me, she said she thinks what happened is that like, much like changes in choreography, which you had talked about before as well, like once they did it elsewhere and realized it could be done, then it wasn't as big of a deal, right? Like, so like once they changed choreography on the tour or set new choreography because Sergio or Danny wanted to like make it more of the moment or just like change it up, then they would come back to us and be like, oh, we're going to change this because we can, right? Or, and say, Ce Soir La was the one where it was mostly happening, yeah. That kind of stuff. But like once I guess they did a two girl show on the road and it was sort of like, oh, we can do that. Then it became less of a, you know, commitment to telling the story as it was.